The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at zbiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's zbiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
John Goodman is a guy with huge range. For a lot of us, he's still the beleaguered and lovable Dan Connor on Roseanne, a show that brought a new kind of realism to sitcoms about working-class families. He was incredibly funny and sad in the legendary film The Big Lebowski as one of Jeff Bridges' sidekicks, the volatile one. But he's even better playing dark, really dark, like the psychopath in last year's 10 Cloverfield Lane. Maybe it's that contrast that made Larry Wright, a staff writer at The New Yorker who's known for his coverage of terrorism, want to talk with John Goodman.
It's such a pleasure to have this opportunity to talk to you.
Thank you.
I was looking through your credits and beginning with commercials, theater, television, movies, animation, and video games. You've been a character actor and a leading man. This is a really singular profile, and because you do everything. And I couldn't think really of how many other actors have spanned all that, and it occurred to me that there is a memoir in here somewhere.
Ghostwritten.
Yes, okay. But there are...
Posthumously.
there are a lot of... There are some editors in the audience, including my own editor, and I thought that while we're sitting here, we would just construct this memoir. It turned out in one of your interviews, you already postulated a wonderful title, I'm So Goddamn Sorry I Did That by John Goodman.
Sounds great.
All right. So chapter one, I Am Born.
I Am Born.
Where were you born?
St. Anthony's Hospital, Grandin, Chippewa, St. Louis, Missouri, June 20th, 1952.
Okay.
4 something in the afternoon. Or no, 10:32 in the afternoon, or in the morning.
And your parents were?
Born to Virginia Goodman, Virginia Lucemore Goodman, and Leslie Goodman, who was a postal worker.
And you never knew him?
No. He died a month before my second birthday.
So tell me about your mother.
She took in laundry, babysat children, which was what today would be referred to as a daycare center, I guess. And just did odd jobs and got a job as a clerk in a drugstore, was a waitress, did all kinds of things.
Well, it seems pertinent because I think whenever I see you acting, there's experience there that I think can't be faked. You come from a background, and I see that in your work. Do you feel like it lives still in you?
It's all relevant. I mean, relative to other things, I really didn't realize we were as poverty stricken as we were. Because I was, I want this, I want that, I want this. A bit later on, I became extremely introverted and just dwelt in my imagination and in my own head, mm-hmm. which has served me well in a career, but not so well in life.
What do you mean by that?
Well, it it's not one of the causes, but it's a symptom of alcoholism, to just not really relate to people that very well, and it leads to selfishness,
yeah.
Bad posture, I don't know. but it fueled a creativity, which thankfully I found an outlet for.
Well, you know, when did you awaken to the idea that there was a world that you could be a part of?
In college. I had dabbled in acting. For some reason, I was always attracted to plays.
Yeah.
I'd get kicked out of a class, and they'd send me to the library for lack of office space. And I would read plays. I have no idea why. Mm-hmm. I had a taste of it in eighth grade, and then later in my junior and senior year of high school.
Yeah.
And I had nothing else going for me. I was a terrible student. The theater department was a natural attraction.
Uh-huh.
And I felt good at it. I felt comfortable at it. I was drawn to it.
Mm-hmm. So chapter two, the New York years. What brought you here when you came right out of college?
I thought my very last year of college, my very last semester, that I could try to make a living. And that's all I want to do, is make a living as an actor.
What was your experience when you first got here?
I was scared. I was terrified.
Really?
But I had to do it. Just the only main reason I came, main motivation, was that I wouldn't kick myself in the ass for the rest of my life, mm-hmm. beat myself up for not trying.
Yeah.
I had to take a shot. And yeah. if I failed, fine. I'll try to get on at Anheuser-Busch. That was a dream job in St. Louis. That was the job to get.
So let's move on to chapter three, which is theater.
Theater. Play
yeah.
practice.
Okay. Alec Baldwin, you worked with him in Streetcar. And he said you were the best Mitch that he had ever seen. And he wanted me to ask you about your experience on dealing with Mitch.
I talked my way into that production because Jessica Lange was doing it. She was a friend of mine. And I was with a very powerful agency at the time, and I think they pulled some strings. And as soon as I got into it, I said, what have I done? I'm far too fat to be playing Mitch. I chose to use an unfortunate accent, which is hard to understand, what we in New Orleans call yat.
Yeah.
Yat. Where yat. Yat. It yeah. comes from where yat. It's a standard greeting. And I just felt it was wrong. Even though I was in it and doing it, I never felt comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's my Streetcar story.
So then I think probably the most acclaimed role that you had was in Waiting for Godot in 2009. This is one of those landmark productions in the theater. Everyone in that production was so good. Yet, you know, I could see that you were heavy then. And Bill Irwin, who was also in that production, said that you were in pain a lot of the time that you were in that production.
Yeah, my knees. Just before I surgically altered my knees.
Yeah.
Some people get Botox, I get knee surgery.
So the next chapter is Roseanne, a big moment in your life, and perhaps the first real steady work that you had, but it also made you famous.
Yep. It was the residual fame of Roseanne was such a tabloid magnet, because she'd say anything. I didn't think that they liked a heavy, outspoken Jewish woman.
Mm-hmm.
So they were all set for her. And so I was like residual target of that.
What do you mean?
If they couldn't get her, they'd try stuff on me. Yeah. I walked out of a place one night with a friend of mine and his girlfriend, and he was right behind us. I was in front with just talking to her, and it wound up on the cover of the National Enquirer that I was getting a divorce and taking off with this woman who I knew enough to say hi to. Just that kind of stuff, printing rumors as fact.
Right.
And for me, that was fame. And I kind of turned into a jerk for a little while. I just all defense. At the time, it was the worst thing that happened to me, was being famous.
Yeah.
But I was doing a job that I loved. It was a lot of fun for a while.
Stop. We're going out to dinner.
No, I don't want to eat with those girls. I just want to have dinner and go to bed.
They're not coming. I'm punishing them.
Whoa.
Yes? And having to eat my chili is just the beginning. Come on, we'll decide the rest of their punishment over dinner. Let's get changed.
But they hate me, right?
No, that's the beauty part. They hate me.
Oh, Dan, that's just great.
Happy Mother's Day.
It was a difficult period of time in some ways. I mean, at one point you walked off the show.
No, I didn't walk off the show. I tried to, until I figured out that ABC could own my house, all of my property. That took some sense, but the time that I made that phone call, I was drunk. And then I did leave the show because in the last year, I just felt that it had run its course. And when, that wasn't my call to make, but I just wanted to move on.
Let's go back to the drunk part.
Okay.
Yeah. you were drinking a lot in that period of time.
Yeah.
And I think what I'd like to understand is how you escaped that.
I bottomed out. I was supposed to go to California for an award show and accept and present an award. I had been on a golf trip about a week before that in the Missouri Ozarks with some friends, and I stayed loaded until it came time for the rehearsal for the award ceremony, and I had to phone in sick. And by the time the next day rolled around, I reckoned that I'd need to be hospitalized. And do I want to just go to a hospital, or do I want to take care of this? And I just didn't want to do this anymore. I got tired of the lying, just feeling rotten all the time, unless I had what Tennessee Williams called the click, which lasted about an hour, and then you're just feeling rotten again.
Right.
And I was getting DTs, and I didn't want to live like that anymore, and I'd lived like that for 20 years, and I've been drinking heavily for 30.
Yeah.
The first five were fun.
Yeah.
I called my wife, which is kind of like Osama bin Laden calling the Navy SEALs. But I was drunk enough to call her, and I said, you know, I need some help, and they got me into a facility, and I just relearned things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't miss that life a bit.
You once woke up while you were driving, right?
Yeah, I was on the Crossbox Expressway doing 60 miles an hour in a VW Beetle. Well, how did I get here? Yeah, not pleasant.
It's terrifying.
I'm sorry you had that story.
Yeah. So let's move on to the Hollywood chapter. I guess the movies that you're most associated with are the Coen Brothers movies. And they're so wonderful. Yeah. So Ethan Coen once said about you, he's normal but crazy. Like everyone else, only more vividly. How'd you get hooked up with the Coens?
I was doing Big River, and then I left Big River to do a David Byrne film, of all things. And in the middle of The Big Easy, a film called The Big Easy, I was in New York and got sent over to an office to meet Joel and Ethan Coen.
Did you know who they were?
No, I didn't know anything. They had one film, which I hadn't seen, Blood Simple, which is great.
Yeah.
It's a great film. which they made for nothing.
Yeah.
And I went in there and just started goofing around with them. It's because they were funny, Midwestern guys.
Yeah.
They had said at one point that we're all provincials. Mm. And you just had the best time not auditioning. Mm. Like, yeah, okay, I read the thing, and then it was for Raising Arizona.
Yeah.
And I think the reason that they cast me was because I had a pudgy baby face.
Uh-huh.
And the theme of the film was babies. There were a lot of baby movies made in the mid-80s. This was the most twisted.
Yeah.
I think.
Mm-hmm. We don't always smell this way, Ms. McDonough. I was just explaining to your better half here that when we were tunneling out, we happened to hit the main sewer line. Dumb luck, that. And we followed that
you
to...
You mean you busted out of jail?
No, ma'am. We released ourselves on our own recognizance.
What Evel here is trying to say is that we felt the institution no longer had anything to offer us. My Lord, he's cute.
He's a little outlaw. You can see that high.
Now, listen. You folks can't stay here.
Ma'am?
You just can't stay. Now, I appreciate you being friends of high and all, but this is a decent family now. I mean, we got a toddler here.
Say, who wears the pants around here, H.I.?
And after that, you didn't audition. They were writing the parts for you.
Yeah, they started writing parts for me until they, I guess they hit a wall with it because they wrote another part for me. It's too much like John Goodman's stuff in our other movies, so they gave it to somebody else.
Perhaps your most famous role is in The Big Lebowski, where you play Walter Sobchak. Tell me how you approached that role.
Thank you to all my reactionary fans. It was all on the page, which I found the only Coen Brothers film I went into with a plan was Raising Arizona. I wanted to play a guy that was a criminal genius with a two-digit IQ.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is right on the page.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that I'm in better hands if I trust material like that.
Yeah.
And I don't think too much or bring too much to it.
Excuse me, sir. Could you please keep your voices down? This is a family restaurant.
Oh, please, dear. For your information, the Supreme Court has roundly rejected prior restraint.
This is not a First Amendment thing,
sir,
man.
If you don't calm down, I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
Lady, I got buddies who died face down in the muck so that you and I can enjoy this family restaurant.
All right, I'm out of here.
Hey, dude, don't go away, man. Come on, this affects all of us, man. Our basic freedoms. I'm staying. I'm finishing my coffee. Enjoying my coffee.
Big Dan Teague in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? This year, the Cyclops in the Ulysses drama that underlies all this. And you really do get to club George Clooney. This is probably one of the great moments in cinematic history.
Yeah, it kills me. I don't think I know what you mean, Big Dan. George, I knew George was in the first year of Roseanne, and he had great hair and a great attitude. And yeah, he made me laugh.
Yeah.
He was so funny.
Yeah, and it's interesting the trajectory that his career has had.
Is he working?
Maybe. He might
be a good kid.
I don't think he works as much as you do.
He doesn't have to.
Yeah. And then Roland Turner in the Inside Llewyn Davis, where you play...
Roland Turner.
Yeah.
No, he's a jazz musician, and after we wrapped, after the film came out, Joel and Ethan were discussing what instrument I played. I think Joel thought I was a trumpet player, Ethan thought I played sax, and I thought I played piano. Who cares?
Do you play any of those instruments?
No, I was accused of playing harmonica for a while. Yeah, when I was in high school, I got into blues. Nobody has the blues like a suburban white kid. I suffered, baby.
You have so many movies that are out now or just coming out, and recently 10 Cloverfield Lane. Tell me a little bit about that experience.
Well, it was great because I got to shoot at home.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. New Orleans for a while was a hotbed of film due to some liberal tax credits, which we no longer have.
Now, you mentioned New Orleans, and that brings us to another chapter in your memoir here. Part of the attraction to New Orleans was the music?
Yes. It's everywhere. Mm-hmm. No matter what part of town you're, either somebody has a radio on or they're playing live music.
It allows you to keep an arm's distance from a lot of the craziness in the business.
Yeah, that's primarily why we moved there. I wanted to get out of town, out of Los Angeles. The business was all consuming. Mm-hmm. The news was all about entertainment. Mm-hmm. And I was getting fed up, and I wanted to get out. And since my wife is from Bogalusa, Louisiana, which is a stone's throw from New Orleans, I decided to move there so she could be near her family when I was, because I knew I'd be gone a lot.
Mm-hmm. So we come to the epilogue. And you've been, it's not quite that far, but you've been very reflective about your feelings about your immaturity and your alcoholism, your weight, all those things. It seems to me the reason that I think that this is a worthy memoir is that you've come to, I think, a really good place in your life. It seems like you have overcome all of those things. And it's been a struggle from out of poverty, out of alcoholism, out of, you know, obscurity. How did you get to where you are now?
I stopped whining. It was actually a benefit of being an alcoholic. I don't know why I am, but I'm grateful for what I've learned in the process of becoming sober, which is a day-to-day process. Alcoholism is a disease, inherited, defective gene. I don't know why, but it is. And the acceptance of that and not wanting to go back into drinking again. I learned more about myself, I guess, but more about acceptance, mm-hmm. and love, and not being as angry as I had been in the past, which I find makes me less funny.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There was a nice benefit to being that angry, which was, but I don't feel like I have to be funny all the time. The class clown, I think he's, I put him to rest. But alcoholics who strive to be sober, I think, become better people. I don't know if that's the case or not, but I'm working on it. And it's something I never did before.
Yeah.
Was the consideration of, and acceptance of other people.
I'm So Goddamn Sorry I Did That by John Goodman. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming.
John Goodman. He talked with Lawrence Wright, a staff writer at the New Yorker Festival.
WNYC Studios is supported by the Natural Resources Defense Council. Using science, the law, and people power, NRDC is committed to confronting the climate crisis, protecting public health, and safeguarding nature. They address the impact of fossil fuels on communities and our environment. They help protect wildlife, public lands, and irreplaceable ecosystems that all living things depend on. They work to enact policies for clean air, clean water, and access to nature for all. You can help NRDC safeguard the Earth for future generations. Visit nrdc.org/WNYC for more information.